For 20 years, Orange County Coast Keeper has been working to safeguard Orange County's 42 miles of coastline and hundreds of miles of streams and rivers. It works cooperatively with diverse groups in the public and private sectors to achieve healthy, accessible, and sustainable water resources for the region. You're listening to Collage, a public affairs show on jazz885.org. I'm Dawn Camber. Our guests are Orange County Coast Keeper founder and president Gary Brown and associate director of programs Ray Heimstra. Well, Gary, please give us an overview of how the Orange County Coast Keeper operates.
Sure. Thank you, Dawn. First, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here. Orange County Coast Keeper, we're all about swimmable, fishable, drinkable water. And all of our programs are geared towards that goal or that mission. We have five pillars of our program, and we've had them all 20 years. And the first is education. We're in around 40 schools, and we put on a watershed education program that's a STEM curriculum. And we pay for buses. We take kids on field trips. We show them where water comes from besides the faucet and where it goes besides the drain. We teach them about the hydrology of from the mountains to the sea. And so it's a program that in the last few years has really expanded, particularly throughout the region, but particularly in South Orange County. We do a lot of advocacy. We work with collaboratively with governmental agencies, and we actually go sit down at a conference table with stakeholders, and we hammer out policies. We hammer out regulations that pertain to water and water quality. We do a lot of restoration. For years, we've done marine restoration. We spent a number of years growing kelp in laboratories and taking it out and putting them on reefs from the South Jetty of Newport to Dana Point. That's why before we've had the water heat up, people saw canopies of kelp on the Laguna Beach coastline. And that was all because of our efforts to plant kelp. And people don't lose sleep over what happened to the kelp, but they do ask what happened to the fish. And kelp is the habitat to over 800 species of fish. And it was amazing to us how resilient the ocean is. As soon as we had kelp growing, fish species returned. And so we've since left kelp, and we have gone into eelgrass in our harbors. In Newport Harbor, we had a five-agency partnership some years ago to plant six sites in Newport Harbor of eelgrass. And I can say it was a miserable failure. I don't think one blade of eelgrass survived us. And so we spent 3 years learning how to grow eelgrass. And we did. And now last year we planted more eelgrass than we'd planted in the preceding 3 years. We've now morphed that into a program that involves oysters. And I never thought when I started Coast Keeper that I'd buy 30 tons of oyster shells, but we did, brought them in, made bags out of coconut fiber material, laid them down, and next to our eelgrass beds were restoring Olympia oysters, which are natural to Newport and this part of the coast. And so and that program is being very successful. Now, why are we putting oysters next to eelgrass? Because we're doing the work and the science and the monitoring to see if we can prove scientifically that that is a natural buffer against sea level rise. Rather than build the walls higher, if you're on the coast, what natural buffers can we put in that would mitigate sea level rise and hold sediment where it is? And so far, all of the indications look good. Now, we have partners on that, which is Cal State University at Fullerton and Cal State University at Long Beach. And the California Coastal Conservancy has been one of the major funders of that. And Honda Marine Foundation has. So that's our restoration. We do enforcement, and this is an area that has grown only because, in our opinion, the agencies responsible to enforce our clean water laws and rules has been lax. And so we've kind of picked up and filled the void. We take on industries at a time. It could be trash haulers. It could be ready-mix plants. It could be metal recyclers, construction sites. And we basically go on, collect evidence, and ensure that they're complying with the clean water laws. And we find that in many, many instances in the whole region, they're not complying. And so we go to them, send them a 60-day notice. And to us, a 60-day notice or a lawsuit is just a formal invitation to collaborate. If they want to collaborate and we figure out and bring in engineers and figure out how they're going to solve their problems, fine. And that's what we prefer to do. If they're recalcitrant and just say, no, we're not even going to talk to you, they wound up getting put in federal court and a federal judge orders them to clean up. And so that's our enforcement program. We also have conservation and sustainability. We have a garden up in a 2.5-acre garden that we invite people to come. It's a demonstration garden. It has six different habitats and six different theme backyards. And we're trying to teach people how to transition to drought tolerant from turf. And if they do the right thing and they learn how to do that, the big benefit to us is they eliminate the urban runoff from a landscape. And so we're very involved in expanding that and helping residents. We now have the capacity to where we can go out and actually design a landscape for an individual homeowner or for a commercial facility.
Now, when you had the drought, mm-hmm. did you do a lot of that?
Yes. When we have a drought, interest. Two things drive public interest. One is the drought. Two is the rebates from the Metropolitan Water District. And if people can get a dollar or two a square foot to take out turf, they're interested. And so those two things drive it. And we've noticed that over the years. I would say that I started Coast Keeper in 1999. In 2005, we realized we needed to go up in the watershed. But I also realized politically I couldn't export Orange County to the Inland Empire. So we created another organization called the Inland Empire Waterkeeper. And they have an office and a staff in Riverside. And do not exactly what we do, but they have programs that fit for that region. This year, in our 20th anniversary, we went to Coachella Valley, and we've established the Coachella Valley Waterkeeper. We have an office and a staff person in Palm Desert, and we're dealing with issues out there which are different from issues here. And they also have the potential catastrophe of Salton Sea and what's going to happen there. So we've been able to grow. We've pretty much stayed focused on our mission of swimmable, fishable, drinkable water.
And we have with us our Associate Director of Programs, Ray Heimstra. And you like to get the public involved with the organization. Share with us how you're able to do that.
Sure. We couldn't do what we do without the help of the public. And that's a big role for us and informing the public on what's going on and how they can participate. And then facilitating that so that they know where to go and what they can do. So for instance, that could be anything from going out and doing tabling at events to let people know about various issues. For instance, marine protected areas are a big issue in Orange County. A lot of people don't know where they are, so we distribute maps. We provide information and education on marine protected areas. There's opportunities during big development projects for the public to be involved, to come and speak to agency meetings or to talk to or write letters to their elected officials. So we help facilitate that. We let them know where the meetings are, who the elected officials are, what the project is and how they can participate and try to get them involved in all of those things. And then, for instance, Gary mentioned the rebate programs from the water districts. One of our biggest programs is our SmartScape program, and we help people one-on-one find those rebates and actually get those, because it's a little bit difficult if you don't know the system.
So you're on the side of recycle and save water, much like the water districts are.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the biggest fear is we could run out of water?
That's the best way for us to do things is to do the easiest and cheapest thing first. That's conservation. Then next you have things like recycling, then stormwater capture, and then the very last thing you want to do is try to develop new supplies, because it's really expensive. So like with any household budget, your water is just part of your budget. If you've got a restrictions on that, the first thing you do is you're careful with what you have, and then you find new sources.
Let's talk about desalination.
So desalination is a big issue in California statewide. There's lots of different ideas for desalination, and some of them make more sense than others. So getting back to what I was just saying about being rational with your resources, desalination is generally the last resort. So they do it in places like Israel, Saudi Arabia. But it's because they have no other resources, no other way to get water. Here, what we're looking at are desalination plants that can fill important gaps that we may have. If there's a place where they're importing a huge amount of their water, and that may get cut off at some time, then it's not a bad idea to think about something that could help fill that gap. If your other sources, if you're just looking at the giant proposed Huntington Beach desalination plant, that's proposed for an area that has a giant aquifer that literally holds decades worth of water. So there's no real reason to build something like that in a location where the water isn't really needed. So the need for the water is really the driver. A perfect example is Santa Barbara. Thought they had a need for desalinated water. They built a plant, spent $30 million, and they shut it down after a month.
Explain how it would operate, any desalination plant.
So any desalination plant is going to pull in ocean water. There's different ways to do that. And then it's going to push the water through membranes using high pressure. And that's very energy intensive, and that's where most of the cost for desalination comes. We've been doing desalination for a long time. They do it on Navy ships. They do it where they need to do it, but it's always a very expensive process, and it's usually very small scale because of the cost of the water. So it's energy intensive and it's technology intensive. One of the things we always hear is, oh, there's a big ocean out there. Why don't we just take the salt out of it and drink that? If we could have done that easily, we would have done that a long time ago. It's much more difficult and expensive than people think.
So therefore, there's a lot of planning that gets involved and a lot of bureaucracy in order for it to happen, if it's going to happen.
There is. There's a tremendous amount of bureaucracy, because it needs to go through a bunch of state review. The state came up with a policy, basically a guideline for how desalination should be implemented in California. And what we're going through right now with the Poseidon Huntington Beach plant is the first implementation of that policy. So it's going through the state agencies. The State Lands Commission has already reviewed it. Right now, the State Water Board is looking at it, and then it'll need to go to the Coastal Commission. So these are big, expensive plants with a lot of economic and environmental impacts. So, yeah, they're very carefully reviewed in California.
I think what a lot of people don't realize is North and Central Orange County sit on an enormous underground aquifer. It's estimated to be 60 million acre feet. That would be three times Lake Mead when Lake Mead is full. That's how large this is. And to think we need to put a desal plant on top of it and pay three times the cost that we can buy water today is an absurd business proposition. But I also think you can't talk about desal without talking about the other thing this region is a beneficiary of, is to have the vision of water districts that created the groundwater replenishment system. Now, in our opinion, and we can back it up and document it, recycling and reuse is really the true answer for California. It's not establishing desal plants along our coast. And for those who don't know, the groundwater replenishment system, which is right along the 405 freeway in Fountain Valley, it takes sewage, puts it through five barriers of treatment, and the net product water is almost distilled water. Then we take that almost distilled water and we put it in the underground aquifer. And then we bring it up as a drinking water source, and it goes to the water treatment plant. And we're doing that for a fraction of the cost of desal, and we have plenty of it. When the plant opened in 2008, it got the equivalent to the Stockholm Water Prize, which is the Nobel Prize for water. It's the largest facility of its type in the world. And I think its success was beyond everyone's expectation. We started it at 70 million gallons a day. Currently, the first expansion, currently it's at 100 million gallons. And in a year or so, it will be 130 million gallons a day. And we're producing the water for actually at the plant less than what it costs to import water. And, you know, when you talk about desal water, you're talking about over $2,000 an acre foot. When we talk about this water, if you take all the bonds and interest and loans, it's around $800 an acre foot. And so there's big cost disparity that certainly the ratepayers should be aware of. The program is so successful. 2 weeks ago, the Metropolitan Water District had a ceremony, a ribbon cutting for a demonstration project in Carson, and that is going to be just like the groundwater replenishment system, but it's going to start at 150 million gallons a day. And of that, Orange County will get 65,000 acre feet a year from that plant in Carson, which is more than the production of Poseidon.
So when we had the recent with the droughts, many of the water districts really went out of their way to find a way for their customers to reuse their water.
Right.
And they created systems and all that. Do you believe that that really, you know, increased more than ever before?
I think what people and I think the general public got the message and they reacted in a positive way. And what we saw in this whole region was a 25% reduction in water demand just because of conservation. People watered their lawns less. People, you know, when you talk about landscaping, we spend billions of dollars for drinking water. And then once we get it, we put 60% of our drinking water on landscapes. So that's truly the low-hanging fruit we need to deal with. But there's all kinds of way to conserve. And we did. When the governor put on the emergency drought restrictions, we conserved 25%, which is and it didn't cost anybody any money. There was no rate increase. And so to think that we can't do a better job conserving, we can. We had a problem when the drought was officially over, the water districts all said, well, it's over, so you can go back. You know, to us, the smart thing would have been just to keep promoting conservation. You know, and so we think, and the whole point of this conversation is there are many options, much more efficient, much better environmentally reasonable, and certainly reasonable cost to a 50 million gallon a day desal plant.
In case you just joined us, you're listening to Collage, a public affairs show on jazz885.org. I'm Dawn Camber, and our guests are Orange County Coastkeeper founder and president Gary Brown and associate director of programs Ray Heimstra. Well, Ray, I understand that we all care about the ocean, and what we do on land impacts what we do on the ocean. So what can we do to make sure that the ocean is clean by our actions on land?
There's actually a lot that we can do. So one of the things we're focusing on a lot is trash and plastics. And there's actually, again, a lot of choices. And this is just an education effort to start off with. A lot of people wonder, well, if I go to Jack in the Box or wherever I go and How do I go ahead and eat my food without the plastic utensils? You can start to bring those things with you. A lot of people are using reusable straws or things like that now. So there's the actual trash reduction. And then, of course, there's the other effort in just trying to make sure that it doesn't get to our creeks and oceans. So the state passed a policy that requires that by 2030, all of our waters are supposed to be trash-free in California. So all of the cities in Orange County and statewide are making efforts to go ahead and meet that goal. They're identifying places where there's high trash. They're putting in screens, things like that. But we don't want to just depend on somebody else capturing our trash. We want to reduce that in the first place. So the real thing is identifying those different ways. Of course, not using plastic water bottles, trying to use reusable utensils and things as much as possible. And just saying no when you go up to some place. If you don't want that salt package or ketchup or whatever, just tell them, don't give me that. I talked to someone the other day and they said their standard spiel is, don't give me a lid and a straw, don't give me napkins, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we just don't think about that.
And the key thing is, when people go in the ocean and someone does stuff inland that impacts the ocean, it also impacts not only the animals in the ocean, but surfers.
Absolutely. So there's health implications from that. This is, you know, trash ends up raising bacteria levels, you know, rising the risk of illness. So it's not just something where the turtles and other sea creatures are suffering. It actually hurts us. And, you know, our economy is a big chunk of that.
Yes. And no, our economy is billions and billions of dollars a year to the Southern California just based on people's use of the ocean. In this particular area, the surveys have shown that the average day in Orange County of a tourist is 3 days. One of those days they go to Disneyland and the other day they go to the beach. And it's a huge industry and it's a huge commercial industry. And to think that we would jeopardize that, you know, I've told people when I've talked to them that I can make a case why we should protect the ocean and have water quality and be concerned about that. And if you don't have an environmental bone in your body, I can make the same case in real estate value terms. And people live, the coast in California, the Southern California coast, is one of the most expensive places to live. And why is that? And why are people willing to pay that? Because it's all about the coast and the ocean. And so, you know, with the prices people pay to live at the coast, we should not accept polluted waterways, polluted harbors, or the negative impacts polluted water makes on our coastal waters.
And thus, the idea that we care about our oceans, I think that's become more real over the years. People care about it more and more.
Much more. Much more. When I started Coastkeeper, I had people tell me of a full-time professional environmental organization in Orange County will never fly. You won't have people supporting it. You know, we've proven that wrong, and we've seen that what we tried to do is make people feel that they could talk about water quality, pollution, they could talk about environmental issues, whether it be parks or whatever, and not have a brand on your forehead as a tree hugger. It was a legitimate conversation to have everywhere. And I think we've seen people's consciousness elevate on environmental issues. Certainly fifth graders up through high school, they're becoming far more environmental, and they go home and teach their mom and dad on what they should be doing. And so, you know, everything is positive.
How can people be part of your organization?
So we have a wide variety of volunteer opportunities. So the easiest is our trash pickups. So we have monthly trash pickups in San Clemente on the first Saturday of every month and in Huntington Beach on the second Saturday of every month. So those are constants. Our Coastkeeper Garden that Gary mentioned before, we're always looking for volunteers to come up and help us out with the garden. That includes everything from planting to being a docent to helping with maintenance activities. And then our marine protected areas that I mentioned, we have a program called MPA Watch, that's Marine Protected Areas Watch. We train citizen volunteers to go out and document human uses. It's a research program, so they actually follow a protocol and document human uses. That data then gets used by the local agencies to make decisions. And that's just part of it. Our restoration program, the eelgrass and oysters need volunteers. We are a volunteer-based organization. So if you get a hold of us, we're going to find something for you to do.
And Gary, do you think you have some budding scientists in the organization?
Oh, absolutely. We have an extensive intern program. We have students from colleges all over coming in and interning in different programs, up to including legal interns. We during the summer have 5 to 6 second and third year law students from colleges as far away as Vermont Law School and Tulane and New Orleans and all over the country come and intern with us. And scientists, we've got interns that got involved with our restoration program to where it changed their life. They decided they wanted to be a marine biologist from working with us. And so, you know, all of that is gratifying. We are fostering and promoting to a younger generation the stewardship of our natural resources.
So over the last 20 years, would you say that Orange County is a lot cleaner thanks to your organization?
I would say things are much better because of our organization and other organizations and our collaborative efforts. I made a list the other day of campaigns that we've done. Desal, you've heard about, but we're part of the coalition on the toll road issue. We were part of and had a leadership role in creating marine reserves. We years ago got Orange County Sanitation District, and that was a 2.5 year battle to get them to put in the facilities to go to full secondary treatment, which was the minimum standard of sewage treatment. And that kind of set the stage to do the groundwater replenishment system that we talked about. So Orange County is a different place than it was 20 years ago, and I think the people are far more aware of the environment, and I think people are connecting the dots to what we need to do.
Where do you see it going in the future, your organization?
I went through some of our programs. We're going to continue those. I think we have a lot to do in the trash area Ray was talking about. We have beach cleanups, and we've had beach cleanups for years. And the good thing is we'll have a beach cleanup and pick up 250 pounds of trash. The sad thing is next month it's back. And so, you know, we're dealing with a symptom, not the problem. And we've got to go deal with the problem. And also, there's things that when I started Coastkeeper, you never heard the term sea level rise. You never heard the term ocean acidification. You never heard the term harmful algal blooms. And these are all more recent developments that we've become aware of and that need to be dealt with. So, you know, I tell people in a joking way all the time that, you know, someday we may be out of money, but we'll never be out of business.
How can people get in touch with your organization?
Well, go check out our website, and it's coastkeeper.org, www.coastkeeper.org. And on there, they can get all the information they need to volunteer, do internships, to get involved, to RSVP, to a beach cleanup. And so we make it pretty easy. Just get to our website, coastkeeper.org.
And we have our social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
And, of course, I bet you're always accepting donations.
Absolutely. We are very appreciative to our donors and supporters. And you know, we're happy with whatever people can afford to give us. And we just hope that our commitment is we're going to continue to fight for clean water.
You've been listening to Collage, a public affairs show on jazz885.org. I'm Dawn Camber. Our guests have been Orange County Coastkeeper founder and president Gary Brown and associate director of programs Ray Hemstra. Please join us next time.